to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You're back at the spot. You return. The place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. We have Dr. Jennifer Anderson with us today, and we're going to talk about cannabis, cannabinoids, medical marijuana, and just the relief. But I've got some questions for her. So before we get started, I want to kind of give you just a little information that I did some research on when it comes to marijuana. Now, back when I was growing up, 60s, 70s, it was to make you happy, horny, or hungry. One of the three. It was recreational. People really thought that it was, you know, kind of a mystique. But if you look at the history of marijuana, it goes back centuries. 4000 BC, the earliest recorded use of medical marijuana. 1971, here we go. President Richard Nixon launched the war on drugs and placed marijuana in the most restricted category. Fast forward, 1980, President Ronald Reagan drastically escalated the war on drugs, leading to a skyrocketing arrest and incarceration for marijuana. Really? 1996, California became the first state to approve medical marijuana with the passage of Proposition 215. Well, we get to 2010. Now marijuana is legalized, mainstream, political issues, as in California, it was on the ballot, Proposition 19. 2012, Colorado, Washington, they came on board. 2016, California, Massachusetts, Maine, and Nevada passed the ballot initiative to legalize marijuana. But what does that mean? You know, we've legalized, in a sense, heroin and cocaine with morphine because people have used those. They were considered as illegal drugs. But then you look back in history, Native Americans used to pull the coca leaf, chew on it, and cure ailments. What's the difference? Is it because it's genetically modified? Is it because it's taxable? Is it the use of it? Is it the misuse of it? We're going to go over all of that and then some with Dr. Anderson. Now, was I clear in my assessment and my history of the use of marijuana?
Absolutely. You know, I'm from Canada, so, you know, our history is a little bit different, although lots of the major points that you mentioned are definitely relative to the listeners in the U.S.
A little bit about the history of marijuana in Canada. I love Canadians, by the way. You guys are so innovative. You are.
You know, we were leading the world in medical cannabis, and now I fear that we're falling behind. But, you know, we have made major progress since the early 2000s. We've had legal access to medical cannabis. It's gone through a lot of iterations. The government has imposed different restrictions along the way, you know, especially when it comes to growing your own. But, you know, there's been some pros and cons to each one. In 2018, our recreational cannabis use became legal, and there's a lot of confusion about that. And basically in Canada, you know, we do have a very, very regulated process that is very different than the UK and the United States. So a lot of studies out there actually don't comment on this at all. And a lot of the major controversy is around the fact that, you know, the products are variable and products aren't reliable and not regulated. But in Canada, that's actually not the case. So we actually have a whole stream of both recreational and medical cannabis. And in some parts, it's actually the same products. And companies actually have to go through a regulatory process where they actually have to have third-party testing and they have to have a government authorization and before they can put it on the shelf. So we know what's in the packages. And then there's a lot of controversy about how much THC is allowed per package and, you know, whether the packages can be opened by kids and different things like that. And that's an ongoing kind of debate. But you know, it's been actually very successful in Canada, despite, you know, what lots of people believe here. When you see what's going on in other countries, I think you get more of an appreciation for what we have in Canada.
We're going to get into the medical aspects of it in just a minute, but you know what people do? They still confuse it with recreational use. And I tell you, I'll drive down the street and someone will roll down the window and the smell of it is absolutely atrocious. It's not the marijuana of old. Brains, I party, okay? I'm 61 years old. And it's not the same, okay? Here in the United States, that's all I can speak for. We're approaching 420. And everybody thinks that it's a free fall. Let's just have a good time. But there are guidelines that are not being followed. You'll go into a dispensary. They'll want to give you a free pre-roll. Here, try it. Not letting you know that it has been laced with something. It's been dipped in some sort of enhancement. You know, you can see it when it burns. It doesn't burn straight ash. You'll see like a liquid. They don't tell you that, okay? I'm just saying, people, beware. You will go in, THC back in the day was 3%, 4%. It's 35%. The THC is the hallucinogenic. Okay, but then you've got hemp, which is used for fabric and clothing. That's a fiber from the marijuana plant. You've got cannabinoids. You've got the CBD oil. I've got friends that swear by the CBD oil. They put it in lotions and they put it in soaps. And then you also have the extreme use of cannabis when it comes to people that have certain medical conditions. And that's what I'd like for you to speak to. Now, tell us a little bit about some of the benefits that cannabis and marijuana bring to the sick.
Well, I've been working with patients for about 8 years now. That's just a little bit longer than, you know, how long things have been legalized recreationally. And I would say of the hundreds and hundreds of patients that I look after every year, chronic pain has to be the number one indication that people are looking for cannabis to help with. You know, aside from that, it's become a lot of patients with anxiety, depression. Some patients actually are just using it for wellness as well, and that's more of a CBD product. You know, people are using it topically for skin conditions, and in pediatrics, which is kind of a taboo topic some places. You know, in pediatrics, we have a lot of research now supporting its use in epilepsy, CBD, that is. And, you know, there's more and more research supporting autism. And for me, I work with a lot of teens doing health risk mitigation, autism, epilepsy, cancers, symptom management. You know, those are the main topics in pediatrics. Oncology is a huge evolving field as well in the adult world. So those would be the main things that I see. And a lot of these things are things that have failed traditional therapy. So when patients are frustrated and not functioning and exhausting all the other options, then they start looking elsewhere. And so a lot of patients actually in Canada, they will go to the dispensary now because it's not as taboo, and they will go and find something. And I hear what you're saying about the dispensaries in the US, and this is a case in point. Our dispensaries are actually Health Canada regulated. And you cannot go in there under 18.
Well, no, ours are too. And they've got all the labeling on there. Yeah. Beautiful package of what's in there.
Yeah.
This, that, and the other. But supply and demand, like cigarettes. Cigarettes always had the warning label. I went to Canada and bought a pack of cigarettes years ago. And I had to go into the pharmacy. And it was behind the counter. And the packaging looked awful. It didn't look like, you know, how we kind of fluff it up and have the cowboy riding on the horse and all this kind of stuff. It really looked like a medical, chemical type of packaging. And I was like, I don't like this. It was deterring. So now ours are, you know, we've got the big billboards everywhere and the signage. But I want to touch on just a couple things before we go, because it's going to be a full conversation here. When you say chronic illness, okay, I'm asking this just as a blanket question. Is it a numbing effect? I mean, I know that people, is it a distraction? How is it really helping? I can, is it really reducing the pain? Or because you are under, I don't want to say under a drug or psychosomatic, I don't want to say use that kind of term, but because you're under the influence of some sort of drug, it detours away from the pain. I know that it can help with eating. I know that it helps with nausea, but I don't know what it is about the marijuana. It's not going to cure whatever ailment it is. Tell me a little bit more about that, and then I'm going to go into, things like what is a cannabinoid and, what is a CBD oil. But tell me, how does it really kind of work that helps people?
So, there's a relatively new system in our body that, has been talked about in the most recent 20 years, and it's called the endocannabinoid system. So I liken it to our endocrine system, and your body has receptors all over in every organ, which is why cannabis has such effects sort of on every part of your body. Now, with pain, a lot of what we are using is the non-psychoactive components of cannabis. So there definitely is a use for THC, but for the most part, CBD with some THC used in a way that's not psychoactive is what I use with my patients. So when we put THC sort of topically, when we put it actually suppositories or under the tongue, we sort of bypass the liver a lot. And clinically, I see patients do not have the same psychoactive effects. They have more pain effects. And there was a recent journal actually that was published in the Journal of Pain, sorry, a study, and it analyzed about 16 RCTs. And when I looked through it, and their conclusion was that CBD was not effective for pain. So I thought, well, that's really strange because I've been doing this forever and, well, for 8 years. And I've seen thousands of patients, and I know that my patients are, they're going back to work, they're getting off all their other medications, and this is after years of dealing with chronic pain. So I went and looked at all the RCTs that they analyzed, and they were indications that I would never use cannabis for. So like reflux, acute pain in the ER, which I do work full time in the ER, so I'm very aware of the pain we see there. Post-op procedures. There was so many things that I just sort of wouldn't have even considered using it. And they didn't even actually include any studies on like arthritis, which is a prime example of something that CBD works very well in, in most people. There is a small fraction of patients who just don't respond to it at all, but that is the same with any other drug. So, it is knowing which cannabinoids you're working with, what kind of pain you're treating. You can really start to see how it can be effective. Now, people that smoke will always have a little bit of a high. And to be honest, I
A little
have
bit of a
looked
high. I
after.
see them wasted.
Yeah. So, I mean, inhalation is never, the best way to use cannabis, especially if
And
you're
I'm
using it medically. And
wait, and
sorry.
I just kind of want to stop you there. Just I'm sorry to interject when you're on the flow, but I was going to ask you about that. Respiratory issues, people with asthma, they continue, they say, oh, well, it's not, it's smoke. Smoke is smoke. Whether it's cocaine smoke, marijuana smoke, cigarette smoke, it is still going to affect the lungs in some sort of fashion. Would you agree to that or no?
So there's a few different classifications of what we call smoking. And patients ask this question all the time. So when we're burning the product, we're creating carcinogens and putting that in your lungs. So that is definitely not ideal. The lack of nicotine out, however, seems to make a difference in your risk of lung cancer. So the risk of lung cancer with combusting or like burning your product is actually less with marijuana. But that's still not great. So there's two other ways to inhale marijuana. One would be through vapes, like tinctures, which in Canada are super strictly regulated. But I always tell my patients, we still don't know the long-term impact of that on your lungs because you're still getting product in there. You're still getting whatever that is in the tincture in your lungs. And so I don't think that that is a very good way to be inhaling cannabis. Dry herb vaping, actually, and I would put bongs and that in there as well. You know, you're not actually burning the product. You're heating it up and you're releasing the different cannabinoids and terpenes at different temperatures. And so in doing that, you can actually use your product longer. You can release what you would like to release in the product, and you can actually you know, get a great effect without dumping carcinogens in your lungs or anything from the tincture vapes.
Okay.
So, you know, those are the three kinds of inhalation. And in patients who do not want to stop smoking or inhaling, I do sort of steer them towards the dry herb vaping, because that at least you're essentially heating it up, and it's a sort of a steam, right? I mean, what's different, you know, going into a steam room and having a bunch of essential oils? You know, it's sort of that. It's probably not still the best for your lungs, but it's better than actually
Can't
burning
you
your product.
also
And when you burn your product, you.
brew it? Can't you brew it like in a tea?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So that would be a form of oral ingestion. You know, you can make teas. We have tons of different types of things here, in terms of hot chocolates and teas and iced lemonades and different things like that too. And you just buy the package and you stick it in your drink.
And then
So that's.
edibles, you know, that's another thing that is a problem here. Number one, don't have them around your children's brains. They think they're gummy bears, or, you know, being and ate them. And we're having problems here with overdosing because they're not regulating the amount or how much they're ingesting. I'm not saying that the dispensaries, they're going to sell it based upon what's on the packaging, but then people come home and they have one and they don't feel an effect. I had a senior citizen, oh my God, broke my heart. I go to her house and she's looking like she's in a daze, and she's sitting over there on the side of the bed. She's holding her head and she looks up and her eyes are red and she's giggly. And I'm saying, "Well, Arlene, are you okay?" And she goes, "Yeah." She says, "But I think I had too many gummies." And I said, "Gummies? Yeah, marijuana gummies. I ate one and I didn't feel anything in 30 minutes. I ate another one, I didn't feel anything, and I've had three. And I thought I was going to take her to the ER." She was wasted. So people don't understand the difference in how quick it gets in your bloodstream when it goes through your lungs, or you drink it, or you eat it. Isn't there a different, or even a topical? Isn't there a difference in the absorption?
Absolutely, yes. You know, and in Canada, you're not allowed to have more than 10 milligrams of THC in a package. Okay.
Wow.
So in the States, when I go to California, I walk into a dispensary and there's like 100 milligram THC bars. You would never find that in a Health Canada licensed dispensary here. And you absolutely cannot open up shop or sell anything that's not Health Canada licensed. And so what that means is that each package that's gone through the licensing gets a sticker. It's, you know, very regulated, and you know, you the packages for edibles are triple ziplocked, so they're actually pretty hard to get into. An adult has trouble opening one of these packages, and so for that reason, you know, it is a lot safer and more regulated. And also, if you did buy a pack, you literally only have two gummies in a pack sometimes, and they're like 5 milligrams each. And they've got CBD or CBN or something else in them, but you would never get a whole, like a ton of, you know, you wouldn't get 100 milligrams in a package. Now, when you take something orally, so I always tell my patients that the edibles are way more psychoactive than oils even. Because when you take an edible, you know, you're digesting it differently. And you can give somebody, you know, a 2.5 milligram dose of an edible, and they'll be, if they're naive to cannabis, they'll be sometimes high, or a 5 milligram. But you switch them to an oil or a spray, and they'll have minimal effects. And so there's quite a big difference in how you take it, and not, you know, every form is equal. So exactly what you're saying. And lots of the companies in Canada are actually coming out with different types of absorption methods, to try to increase absorption of CBD, for example, because it's only, I think, 20 or 30% actually gets absorbed. And then for topicals, increasing the absorption of topicals. Now, you won't I have never seen anyone get any psychoactive effect with topical THC. And I use it for a lot of things, especially when you don't want to be using systemic THC. There's so much to kind of consider when you're looking at your patient. And when it comes to a psychoactive effect, when I deal with cancer patients, some of them have told me, you know what? Sometimes I need that little psychoactive effect because this is just
Exactly.
so hard.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't judge them for that. I think if I went through that, I would say the same thing, right? I mean, if
Exactly.
you look at opioids, for example, people get high on opioids. You know, we're so judgmental towards cannabis, but we're handing out opioids everywhere. You know,
Opioid,
and people
I
aren't
mean, it's an
functioning.
addiction.
They're, yeah,
It is an absolute, I mean,
absolutely.
where Big Pharma made a whole lot of money and they had, be sued and regulated because it wasn't. It was the amount, it was the prescription dosage that they were giving. So again, it's the dosage. Okay, let me dial back a little bit because again, there's so much I want to ask you. Can you tell us the difference between THC, the cannabinoids, and CBD, the cannabinoids, and there was one other thing that you mentioned. I don't know.
CBN.
We'll start. Well, yeah. No, we'll start with the, what is a cannabinoid and what is the CBD? How is that extracted from the plant, per se?
Yeah, so the plant has over 100 cannabinoids, we call them, and those are the main components that we look at. The two major ones are CBD and THC, THC being the psychoactive component. CBN, which is becoming more popular, especially for sleep, is a derivative of THC, but not as psychoactive. And so that's, come into play for insomnia. And CBD, is the non-psychoactive component that, we've been using for inflammation, type pains, as well as epilepsy is the main thing that's been in the last 10 years. There's also terpenes and flavonoids in the plant. And, with extraction, you can, a lot of times they are taken out, but sometimes they're kind of put back in. And you can mix your cannabinoids with your terpenes and flavonoids in different combinations to get different effects of from your CBD and THC. The way I describe it to my patients is that the terpenes specifically help to steer the CBD and the THC to work in different ways. And so that's why some products will give you an effect, one effect, and then if you take the same amount of CBD and you have different terpenes, you'll get a different effect. So I think that's really important to understand. And when we talk about indica, sativa, or hybrids, we're really describing the combination of the terpenes and how they are coming together. So if you have stimulating terpenes, mostly in a plant, or in a product, it's going to be labeled as a sativa. If you have more sedating ones, it's going to be labeled as an indica. And then if you have kind of a blend, then it'll be a hybrid. Because there's no true sativas and indicas anymore. It's all mix and match now. And people are just making products specifically in the combinations that they want.
And genetically modifying the actual seed and the plant. A lot of that's going on too. Because
Absolutely.
we won't go into, some of these major companies with the wheat and the grain and the rice here in the United States, the cross-pollination of what's happening. But now you can't even get the seeds to grow your own because your seed is genetically modified once you put it in the soil already. Is that a possibility?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm that's not where my knowledge sort of
Right.
is, although I did meet a patent lawyer in California at one time, and he was telling me a lot about what he does now as a new patent lawyer for cannabis strains. So, definitely a lot of manipulation going on, and people are using lawyers to make sure that they can keep their strains.
There's a lot of celebrities that have their own strain of, it's very popular. You'll go in and they have their own strain. But let's get off of the recreational use and let's get down to what's really important, the medical use. You've had some experience with epilepsy and working with, individuals that have epilepsy and also working with teens. Tell us a little bit about your experience and how do you, you know, how do you encourage, or I shouldn't say encourage, educate parents and, you know, tell them that this might be a viable option because, you know, they're back in the days of hippy dippy getting high. They're not thinking about really the medical benefits and where this is going.
Yeah, you know, I guess it comes back to my son was, you know, my first patient, so to say. So when my son was three, he was seizing multiple times an hour, despite a lot of different medications. And at that time here in Canada, you know, our recreational cannabis wasn't legal yet, and it was still pretty taboo. Most physicians didn't even realize that it was legal medicinally, and especially not for kids. So, you know, when my son was basically at the point where they were asking me if I wanted him resuscitated, I wanted, you know, if I wanted to meet with the palliative team, you know, I did what any other mom would do, and I started looking online. At that point, fortunately, Sanjay Gupta had done the CNN special and featured Charlotte Figge. I found that quite quickly and went on a rabbit hole there and, you know, decided that CBD had to be the next option. When I approached my neurologist, who actually trained in the States in Johns Hopkins and a few other places, and actually was part of the Epidiolex trials, which is now a pharmaceutical grade CBD for kids with epilepsy, you know, she actually believed that that could be a really great option. But, you know, the specialists here where I live were not going to help me with it. And they basically said I needed to go find a family doctor who is an expert in epilepsy and cannabis. And, you know, they couldn't help me with that either. So, you know, that just left me really stranded and frustrated with the system, because here I was not given any other options and had this potential option. So it's a long story, but, you know, I ended up figuring out a way. And within a week or two, my kid was completely different. He stopped seizing at night almost immediately. And over year to year, his seizures reduced by at least 50%. And, you know, his hospital charts were massive because we were there all the time. I think that we were in hospital at the end there probably 80% of the time. And, you know, now we haven't been there in 6 years. So the results speak for themselves. And after about a year of that, I was approached by like a clinic here who was seeing patients with cannabis. And they said, you know, all these parents are coming here, but none of the cannabis doctors actually want to see them. Like, we can't find anyone to see these kids. And my initial response was, absolutely not. I am not going to be the pot doc for kids, you know, and I was not going to sacrifice my license anymore. And, you know, but after a few months of working with it with my son and learning more and really delving into the research, I thought, you know what, I will see the kids that have failed everything, that have, you know, have a diagnosis of intractable epilepsy. And I will work with their neurologist and I will give them a trial of it. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, well, at least they had the option, because really that's what I wanted as a parent. And so, you know, I started doing that in 2017, and I will never forget the first couple parents I saw. They were so desperate. And when I said I would help them, they were just in tears. And I saw them and I saw myself. And I just thought, you know what? All they want is hope, you know, and if it doesn't work, they just want to be able to say they tried it and before they bury their kid, right? Because seizures kill, they do. You know, sudden unexpected death in epilepsy is directly related to how many seizures you're having. If you're having multiple seizures an hour, your risk is pretty high. So, you know, without any other options, I started working with these kids, and some of these kids had failed so many options. They'd been all around the globe. There's one kid in particular, nobody could help him. You know, within a couple months of CBD, he was like progressing so much at school. His seizures drastically reduced. He was starting to communicate. They were starting to be able, like, he was really impaired and developmental delayed. But he was able to start using a computer to communicate. He was able to sort of indicate what he wanted. They were starting to toilet train him. This was, I think he was like 7 or 8 at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just so dramatic. And, you know, it didn't take very many patients for me to say, you know what, this actually has to be an option. So I just kept on seeing people under the radar, and I would write a letter to their neurologist and say, this, you know, this patient approached us, you know, this is what I've done. You know, they've they failed other treatments. I want you to know, because there are drug interactions with CDD as well, and there's some antiepileptics that, will interact. So it was super important that I make sure that we're all part of the team. And I mean, long story short, within a few years, neurology and a lot of the pediatricians started actually referring the kids. And then we started just organically working as a team. And so today, I actually work with a lot of their neurologists that wouldn't help my son, which has been, a really interesting journey. But, all these kids now where I live, they get to work with a team that, helps them explore this if this is something that they want. So, I mean, I only work by, I only work in a team. And so it's not like anybody can just come and say, can you help me? It's a consult-based service. So, it's worked really,
But
really
I, you
well,
know,
and it ensures that these kids are well looked after.
I bet their jaws dropped when they saw you coming back through the door, and they're like, what? But yeah,
Well,
bravo.
I did get some pretty good hates at the beginning. Yes,
Well, you
they
know
some
what?
of them just had,
Let you, but you got to let the haters be your motivators. You didn't let them stop you. Your
Yes.
son was he's the poster child for success. Now, and everyone is different, I get it, but how do you administer this? Do you do it in a pill form? And when you said suppositories, I forgot that that is another way of administering medication. But, and if a child is, have certain disabilities, they may not be able to swallow or, doesn't swallow. So I get that. But is it a shot or a pill or, I'm sure you're not going to be sitting around with a bong with with your young
No,
kids.
no.
But
That is still the main question I get. Do the kids smoke it? I'm like, no, they don't smoke it. So we have oils that have a high dose of CBD in them. Epidiolex in the States would be sort of the equivalent, and they are apparently coming to Canada, but I don't think that their cost can compare it to what we already have. So we have 100 milligram per ml CBD oils that are highly regulated by Health Canada. And that is what we use because I dose the kids per weight. So whatever their weight is, we have a sort of a scale that I kind of do, and a method to introducing the child to CBD. Some of the kids take it orally, but a lot of the kids, as you mentioned, don't take things orally. So they actually usually have G tubes or feeding tubes, and we mix it with the formula and we put it through the tube. And that's actually how my son gets it as well.
Wow. I tell you, it's come a
Yeah.
long way. And just think of how many people are incarcerated. They're lightening up on that here in the United States for marijuana, which then, I mean, this has been a Native American ritual and plant since I can remember. Again, there was only three functions for it once upon a time, but they never allowed for that. But now that they're able to tax it, it's big business. Here in the United States, we have a dispensary like we have coffee shops on every corner. It's embarrassing almost because it cheapens the value. And again, they're walking in, they're not going to your office, they don't have a prescription. They are not dosing by weight. They're not taking that into consideration. They're just lollygagging, walking in there and getting all kinds of things. I'm gonna tell you guys a quick story. Change the subject just a second. Well, you know me, I'm very curious. So I'm driving down the street and I see this reggae band. And it's going into this building that I knew was kind of abandoned, but it had some space. I said, ooh, there's a party in there. Let me park. Well, I go in and I smell something, but I don't smell a lot. I go outside and I hear people say, oh, are you with the wax? Are you coming to get the wax? I said, the wax? I didn't know. I had walked into a 420. That's the celebratory day for marijuana smokers, April the 20th. I walk in there and this young woman peels this waxy-like substance off of this honeycomb-looking thing. She puts it on top of the marijuana, she melts it. And she inhales it. Dr. Anderson, it looks like her whole body is about to swell up. And then she exhales and she just falls to the ground. And I'm like, what in the world is this? Are you down with the wax? You want some wax? I said, no, I don't wax. Well, then I go over to get some nacho cheese. You know, they've put the THC in the cotton picking nacho cheese. I couldn't eat that. Then I said, well, let me go listen to the reggae band. They're all waxed out. I couldn't tell one note from the next. And it was just really, really awful. And then as you go out, there's a pamphlet that they hand you. Oh, are you into cannabinoids or the CBD oil? After I had that experience, I wanted no part of marijuana, period, anymore, under any circumstances. But then I look at people like my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law has chronic pain and nausea. She can't eat. And because of, you know, and she's using regular marijuana, it reduces her anxiety. It allows her to, you know, eat. And again, that bit of hallucinogenic in there takes the edge off that everyday existence. So there is a lot of benefits, but what we want to do is we don't want to encourage recreational use. You know, I mean, you're grown, you can do what you want to do, but we want people to really take into consideration what you're doing, how you're doing it, educate your children on what this is, just like alcohol, cigarettes, heroin, cocaine, marijuana can fall right into that same dysfunctional pattern if it's not monitored. We want to hail and support medical advancements and support Dr. Anderson and what she's doing and other physicians that are really looking to use something that is common as a natural plant, because that is where medicines come from. They are plant derivatives. You know, you look at penicillin and you look at cocaine, morphine. They use those all the time to relieve pain and help people. So I know I had to give my mother morphine when she was transitioning. I was scared to death that I was going to overdose her on it, but it helped her with her breathing. And it helped her transition. So don't overthink it, brains. Educate yourself on it. Is there any other suggestions, tips, or information that you'd like to provide us with, Dr. Anderson, in closing?
No, I think this has been a great discussion. I think, you know, it's really important to identify the recreational versus the medical. You know, I do get patients coming to me that, you know, they start off recreationally, but then when you actually talk with them, they are using things medicinally as well. And I actually get them doing an intention journal. And so basically I tell them every time you're going to use, write down why. You know, is this because you're going out with your friends and you just want to have fun? Or is this because you can't sleep? Or is this because you're anxious? Are you too anxious to go to math class? You know, for the teens, I get sent a ton of teens that are smoking weed and the parents are freaking out. And so that is the main thing we talk about. But I also say, you know, when you come home from work, you have a glass of wine, you know, you have a glass of wine and you're using it medicinally because you're trying to calm down, right? You go to the doctor, you get, you know, some Ativan, you're using that to calm down. So, you know, trying to teach our teens that you need to question everything you do, you know, whether it's a medication from the doctor, whether it's a glass of wine after work, whether it's the weed that your friend's given you, right? Because if you know why you're doing something, even if you're doing it for fun, at least you're more likely to be in control of that, you know, and you're more likely to question when people do give you things. And so, you know, that's just kind of been a grassroots initiative that I've done with all the teens, and I found it really, really helpful. And the adults find it helpful too when they start to be more intentional about their use. And from what you're describing in the States, I have not seen that here. But that does give me some insight into maybe why things are still so taboo in the States.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But I thank you. I thank you so much for, you know, being a risk taker, being an innovator, taking charge, because you spent a lot of time and energy and money and education in being a physician. And you took a risk, you took a chance. I know that you would do anything for your child, but you're doing it for other people's children. And so I thank you. And I thank you for being here on the edge with us. And we will definitely, you know, if there's anything that you need support, definitely stay in touch with us, because I'd love to, you know, bridge that gap between the fact and the fiction. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. But before we leave, tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they want more information, if you've written any papers, how they might be able to get in contact with you.
Sounds great. Okay, brains. If you want to get in contact with me, I do have a website. It's www.cannabisdoc.ca, and you can reach out to me through that website. I am also on Instagram at Confessions of a Single Doctor Mom and on LinkedIn as my name, Dr. Jennifer Anderson. Feel free to reach out and I can help you the best I can.
She's awesome sauce brains. Okay, do your due diligence. Do what's right. You don't know what you don't know. Don't judge. Don't overthink it. Educate yourself. Thank you so much. And go in and like, love, and share. Thank you so much, Dr. Anderson. You